You may be seated. Morning.
Morning.
I had to smile as we were going over the Sunday school lesson. The question number 7 about the fear of God. That's what I'm going to be talking about this morning. We're going to start out in Exodus chapter 19. In this chapter, the children of Israel are camped at the Mount Horeb. And starting in verse 17, "And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the nether part of the mount. And the Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace. And the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai, on the top of the mount, and the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go down, charge the people, lest they break through unto the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. And Moses said unto the Lord, The people cannot come up to the Mount Sinai, for thou chargest us, saying, Set bounds about the mount, and sanctify it. And the Lord said unto him, Away, get thee down, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron with thee, but let not the priests and the people break through to come up unto the Lord, lest I break forth upon them. This is a very terrible sight here. The mountain's smoking. God's actually talking. So Moses went down unto the people and spake unto them. And the Lord and God spake all these words, saying, and there he gives them the Ten Commandments. Now, in chapter 20, down in verse 18, after he's given the Ten Commandments, and all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, Speak thou with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said unto the people, Fear not. For God has come to prove you that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not. So what does he mean right there in this verse? He says, Fear not. And then he says, God come to prove you that his fear may be before your faces. In Proverbs it says, The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And then John says, Perfect love casts out fear. How's this fit? A couple weeks ago we heard a sermon on Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And verse 13 says, Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So part of my duty is to fear God. And yet perfect love casts out fear. I think just as there is a lot of confusion on what it means to work for your salvation or to be saved by works, just as there's a lot of confusion on what grace is and what grace is not, I think there is a lot of confusion on fear. And I want to talk this morning about the proper fear of God. I'm going to give an illustration that I think helps to explain it. It's something when I observed it, I said, you know what? That means something to me. It was a number of years ago, before we moved down here. We had goats. And one day, a goat was out of the fence. And I was surprised when I saw the goat that was out of the fence, because it was one that didn't normally get out. To the best of my recollection, that's the only time that goat was ever out of the fence. Well, that was odd. I went to put the goat back in the fence. Now, normally, I could walk up to this goat and pet this goat. When the goat saw me coming and knew its feed time, it would come to find me. We're going to eat now. But this time, when I got close to the goat, it ran off. It runs over the fence and it starts walking back and forth along the fence, bleeding, looking for a way in. I couldn't get close to it. I had to go ahead and open the gate and then come back and follow the goat. The goat followed the fence till it found the gate and went in. And we were friends again. Okay? Now, let's just say that the farmer is God. Let's say that the fences are his boundaries and the goats are people. What kind of fence did I keep those goats in with? It was two strands of electric wire. Those goats could, without difficulty, anytime they wanted and at any place, go through that fence. But they were afraid to, because they didn't want to get shot. And a goat that made a habit of going through, I disowned them. Okay, I got rid of them. So God's law is not a physical boundary that you cannot cross. Anytime you want, you can go sin. There is nothing to stop you except a prick in your conscience that says you're on the wrong side of God now. If you make a habit of doing that, God will disown you. You're no longer one of His. If you are content to stay inside of God's boundaries, God is your friend. Christ's return means something good to you. So, think of Adam. God walked in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam hid. Why? Because he had crossed God's boundary. For him, when God showed up, it was not a good thing. When God showed up, God cursed him and put him out of the garden. Had he stayed inside the boundary, God showing up would have been a good thing, and he would not have hid. He would have had nothing to be afraid of or nothing to be ashamed of. Deuteronomy 10:12 says, "And now Israel, what doth the Lord thy God require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, and to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul." God wants you to love him and serve him, and we'll talk more about love and fear later. But Adam Clark has an interesting note on Exodus 20:20 that I want to read. And Moses said, "Fear not, for God has come to prove you that his fear may be before your faces." The maxim contained in this verse is, fear not, that he may fear. Okay, don't be afraid so that you can fear. Do not fear with such a fear as brings consternation into the soul and produces nothing but terror and confusion. In other words, you know you are in line for a punishment and there's nothing you can do about it and you panic. But fear with that fear which reverence and filial affection inspire, that ye sin not. In other words, be afraid to trespass. That through the love and reverence ye feel to your Maker and Sovereign, ye may abstain from every appearance of evil. lest you should forfeit that love which is to you better than life. He who fears in the first sense, in other words, is terrified, can neither love nor obey, because he is convinced that God is after him for harm. Okay, so why would you obey him? You could not love him. You cannot love something that you think is destroying you. He who fears not in the latter sense, like the reverence, is sure to fall under the first temptation that may occur. Blessed is the man who thus feareth always. Now keep in mind also that faith and fear go hand in hand. If you have faith, you will fear God. Because you believe that God is who he says he is. You believe that he will do what he says he will do. And you will be afraid to trespass. You'll be afraid to go outside of the boundaries he set. You know, the goat knows when it's outside the fence, it's in trouble. That's why it doesn't want the farmer showing up. And if you believe God, you believe that this is the boundary he set, and he said that he will give to every man a just recompense. You understand that he loves righteousness and hates iniquity. You'll be afraid to go outside those boundaries. Now, inside the boundaries, those goats can happily graze all day. They are not terrified of the farmer. They're not afraid of the fence. They can walk right beside the fence. It doesn't bother them. They're afraid to cross the fence. They're afraid to touch the fence. And if you believe God, you believe what he says, it will instill in you a fear to do what you know displeases him. Now, it is possible to fear God without having an obedient faith to God, like the devils do. They believe and tremble. Okay, but they do not have an obedient faith to God. A lot of people try to avoid the fear of God. They say, if you're motivated by fear, then, well, like John said, you know, perfect love casts out fear. So you should not have this fear. It should just be love. You should serve God because you love God. But if you do it that way, you are sure to trespass. Because you love God and you kind of assume that God loves you and that we're okay. I'm okay with him. He's okay with me. And what are these boundaries for? Well, I stay inside the boundaries because I love being inside the boundaries. But if I'm not afraid to cross them, eventually you will cross them. So how does fear and love go together? Well, in 1 John 4:16, and we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth inside of God's boundaries, dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. In other words, when Christ returns, we do not have to fear or be terrified, would be a better way of saying it. Because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love. But perfect love casts out fear, because fear hath torment. Okay, now that is important there. He says, fear hath torment. There is a fear that does not have torment. And we'll explain that. And it says, he that feareth is not made perfect in love. Again, I'm going to read Adam Clark. He explains it very well. Now I condensed it. He has quite a lengthy note on this passage. I'll try and read the important stuff. The man who feels that he loves God with all his heart can never dread him as his judge. Because you love God, you think he is just, you think God's perfect. You can't be afraid of that. As he is now made a partaker of his spirit and carries a sense of the divine approbation in his conscience, he has nothing of that fear that produces terror or brings torment. The perfect love, that fullness of love which he has received, casts out fear, removes all terror relative to this day of judgment. For it is of this that the apostle particularly speaks. He's particularly speaking about fear that has torment. Because right there John said it, because fear hath torment. Does all fear have torment? Not all fear, but the fear that it will not be well with you on judgment day has torment. Let's see. And as it is inconsistent with the gracious design of God to have his followers miserable, and as he cannot be unhappy, whose heart is full of the love of his God, this love must necessarily exclude this fear or terror, because that brings torment, and hence is inconsistent with that happiness which a man must have who continually enjoys the approbation of his God. God does not want to make you miserable. So if you love God, he will see to it that the fear that terrifies you is gone. He will give you an assurance that it will be well with you. And we'll cover more of that later. Adam Clark goes on. He who is still uncertain concerning his interest in Christ. In other words, you want to serve Christ, but you still have some reservations. Who, although he has many heavenly drawings and often sits with Christ some moments on the throne of love, he loves God some of the time, but not fully committed yet, yet feels from the evils of his heart a dread of the day of judgment, is not made perfect in love, has not yet received the abiding witness of the Spirit that he is begotten of God, nor that fullness of love to God and man which excludes the enmity of the carnal mind, and which it is his privilege to receive. In other words, if you're not fully committed to God, then you do not fully feel that it will be well with you on Judgment Day. If you have some reservations in your own mind about whether you really want to follow Jesus, then you will also have reservations in your own mind as to whether it's actually going to be well with you on Judgment Day. You do not get the full assurance until you have made the full commitment.
Right.
But is the case of such a man desperate? A man who wants to serve God but is still a little iffy? He says no. It is neither desperate nor deplorable. He is in the way of salvation and not far from the kingdom of heaven. He cannot stay in that state, but he is on the right track. Let such earnestly seek and fervently believe on the Son of God, and he will soon give him another baptism of his Spirit, and will purge out all the old leaven and fill their whole soul with that love which is the fulfilling of the law. The love which is the fulfilling of the law is the love which the law was intended to produce. In other words, if you have some reservations in your heart as to whether you fully love Jesus or whether you still have some of your own preferences, ask God. Seek God. Don't despair. You're not in a bad state. You're just beginning to grow. Keep growing. Keep asking. Keep seeking. The terror, God can take away as your love grows. And I like his explanation here. Among men we find some that have neither love nor fear. Others that have fear without love, others that have love and fear, and others that have love without fear. Number one, profligates and worldly men in general have neither the fear nor the love of God. Number two, deeply awakened and distressed penitents have the fear or terror of God without His love. They've woken up to the fact we're in trouble with God and they're terrified, but they haven't done anything about it yet. Number three, babes in Christ or young converts have often distressing fear mixed with their love. They love God, but they're still uncertain. The farther you travel down the path of obedience and submission to God, the more you see and understand God, the more you can love and appreciate Him, and the more the terror of meeting Him is gone. Now, there's still a fear of Him, but it's not the terror. And he says, number four, adult Christians have love without this fear. He's talking about the fear that has terror. Because fear hath torment, and they are ever happy being filled with God. So, adult, mature Christians still fear God. But they don't have the fear that brings torment.
Right.
They do not have the dread of judgment day. They don't wish to postpone and put off Christ's second coming. You know, you can be awful suspicious when somebody tries to tell you that Christ's second coming is still a long ways off and they don't think it'll happen anytime soon. It's like you hope it doesn't. There's something inside you that doesn't want Christ to come back. But when you are a mature Christian, you're walking with God, you want Him to come back, and the sooner the better. Okay, and a little bit more of Adam Clark, and then we'll move on. We are not to suppose that the love of God casts out every kind of fear from the soul. It only casts out that which has torment. The fear of want, the fear of death, and the fear or terror of judgment. All these fears bring torment and are inconsistent with this perfect love. Some of what I did not read, you know, he mentioned there is fear that is not cast out. Okay, the fear of sudden alarm. Okay, if you're walking through the woods and you come across a rattlesnake, there's fear. Well, does that mean you don't perfectly love God? If you love God, you wouldn't be afraid of that snake. No. The fear it casts out is the fear that it's not going to pay to serve God. The fear that in the end it's going to turn out ill for me. That's the fear that it casts out, because you believe God, you know He will reward you, He will take care of you, and you're not terrified. If we love God, our love will constrain us to honor His boundaries. And we will not have to fear or have terror knowing that we are outside the boundaries. That is the fear or the terror that perfect love casts out. Because perfect love is inside God's boundaries. And we know when we're inside God's boundaries, there's no dread of meeting Him. But mature Christians still fear God. And let's turn to Daniel chapter 10. Let's look at the way mature saints respond to God. In Daniel chapter 10, and in verse 5, this is Daniel talking. Then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning, and his eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. Okay, this is talking about the Lord. It's talking about Jesus in a glorified state. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption. In other words, I realized how ugly I was, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. It sounds to me like he fainted. And behold, an hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands, and said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, this man is greatly beloved of God, yet he falls flat on his face. Understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. Sounds like he was afraid. Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel. Now let's go to Revelation chapter 1. The disciple John, the disciple whom Jesus loved. In verse 12, he's talking, he said, And I turned to see the voice that spake with me, and behold, and being turned, I saw seven golden candlesticks. In the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot, and girded about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire, and his feet unto like fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace, and his voice is the sound of many waters. A very similar description is what Daniel gives. And he had in his right hand seven stars, and out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance was as the sun shineth in his strength. And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. What was his response? He saw Jesus in a glorified condition, and he falls down like he's dead. And he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, Fear not. Why is it that when Jesus shows up to his the most righteous, most beloved people, they fall down like dead, and he has to say, Fear not? Because of the fear of God. Okay? Oftentimes, people talk about God and they forget who they're talking about. But turn over to Revelation chapter 6. And in verse 14, And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, Fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? We don't see Daniel and John calling for rocks and mountains. Okay, they fainted. But Jesus puts his hand on them and says, Fear not. These people know they're in line for judgment. God's not going to tell them, Fear not, because they have a reason to fear. And they're looking desperately for somewhere to hide. That's the difference. There is a fear of God, a respect of who God is, what God can do, and a respect for the fact that you have to be on the right side of him. And there is a terror of God, knowing you're on the wrong side of him, knowing that you're going to pay for what you've done. You know, this picture, it reminds me. I've noticed that people like to hide behind computers and phones and shoot insults. They'll say things that they wouldn't say in a face-to-face conversation. They don't want a face-to-face confrontation. People will hide behind the sky and hurtle insults at God. Maybe he doesn't exist. Oh, he's just all love and grace. But they don't want a face-to-face confrontation with God. And when the heavens roll back like a scroll, they're looking for somewhere to hide. The proper fear of God is a fear with hope. God gives us fear with hope, a reason to expect that he will be favorable to us. A fear of him with a reason to expect that when we see him, he will be favorable. He will put his hand on us and say, "Fear not." That is the proper fear of God. That is the fear that God offers. It's not a fear that tramples boundaries. It's not a fear that does not want to see God. It is a fear of God, but a hope that when I see God, it's going to be the best thing ever. So yes, I fear him, but oh, I long to see him. Because you've done what was required. God gave a list of requirements. He set boundaries, and he said, "You keep yourself inside these boundaries, and when I show up, I'll reward you. I'm not going to punish you." We believe that. We understand it. And yes, we fear him. We are afraid to trample boundaries. But we will be glad to see him. We'll look a little bit in Job chapter 40. Another response of one of God's people. In Job 40, verse 1, "Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, Shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. Then answered Job the Lord and said, Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no farther." Now, the Lord answered Job out of a whirlwind. Job did not see the Lord. But the Lord came down and asked him questions. And Job says, "Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Twice, but I will proceed no farther. I'm done. I said too much already." And go over to chapter 42. "Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not, things too wonderful for me which I knew not. Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak." In other words, he's saying, I said, "Hear, I beseech, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Therefore I abhor myself, and repent in dust and ashes." Job was trying to vindicate himself, and he cast a shadow on God's character. And Job is saying, I said of God, "Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak, and I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me." But he's saying, "I didn't know what I was doing. Therefore I repent in dust and ashes. I had no right to question what God was doing." Okay, Job forgot a little bit. And God reminded him, "You know who I am. You know what I've done. You know what I can do. Why are you questioning me?" Don't question or provoke God. Don't trample his boundaries. You respect what he's capable of. To not fear God is presumption. It is to presume that he can do you no harm. Either because you're stronger than he is, or wiser than him, there's nothing he can condemn you for, or he does not really hurt people, or he doesn't really exist at all. So, let's go on to Mark chapter 4. What is the problem that we face? Or maybe I should say another problem we face. In Mark chapter 4, verse 36. When they had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship, and there were also with him other little ships. And then arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship, so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him, and said unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? And he arose and rebuked the wind, and said unto the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith? And they feared exceedingly, and said one to another, What manner of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? So was there a fear a problem, or was there fear a good thing? Well, which fear? You see, God's laws are good. His ways are wise. Staying within his boundaries is to your advantage. So why do people cross the boundaries? The difficulty doesn't come because of God's way. The difficulty comes because it's contrary to your carnal nature. The world doesn't like it, and the devil's out to get you. So, if God's ways aren't that hard, what's the problem? The problem is when your flesh, the world, and the devil cut loose, it's a pretty fearful storm. Are you going to be afraid of the storm and say, God, don't you care that we're perishing? Or are you going to be afraid of God? You see, the disciples were afraid of the storm, but they forgot God's in the ship. Okay, you think the storm's going to drown you, but don't cross Jesus' boundaries, because he just, with the word, calms the storm. Okay, what sort of man is this that even the wind and the seas obey him? He's the creator. We get in the middle of the storm and we think things are going bad and we blame God. Don't you care what we're going through? You should be afraid to say that. Don't you realize if you are inside of God's boundaries, he's in the ship with you? He can calm the storm, but he's chosen to let it go. Don't make him mad. Don't cross the boundaries. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 24, the disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his Lord. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call them of his household? Fear them not, therefore. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known. What I tell you in darkness, that speak ye in light, and what ye hear in the ear, that preach ye upon the housetop. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both the soul and the body in hell. In the midst of the storm, don't panic and blame God. They may be able to kill the body. Jesus never promised a smooth ride. But God is able to kill the body and send the soul to hell. You don't have to be afraid of their wrath or their disapproval. But you need to be afraid of God and of his wrath and of his disapproval. You need to have a healthy respect for what God can do to you, or you will not survive the storm. Your ship's going to capsize. What will wind up happening is in the midst of the storm, you'll blame God and throw him out of the ship. If The storm will be nasty. There's times it may be very hard. They can kill the body. They can reject you. So remember Peter. When Peter saw Jesus coming to them walking on the water, he said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come to thee. And Jesus said, come. And Peter went walking on the water. But when Peter looked about at the storm, he began to sink. Don't take your eyes off God. Don't look around at what the world might do to you, what might happen to me. Keep your eyes on God. If Jesus told Peter to come to me, that means Peter could do it. Peter didn't have to be afraid of the storm. He didn't have to be afraid of the waves. We don't either. It may be hard. It may be a terrible thing. But it is nothing compared to crossing God's boundaries. Franklin Roosevelt said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I remember my mother didn't like that very much. She said, I'd never say that while there's rattlesnakes out in the woods. Okay, in the context he said it, there was some merit to it. What he meant was, if we panic, it'll only get worse. And I say, the only thing we have to fear is trespassing God's boundaries. The only thing you have to be afraid of is God showing up and finding you outside the fence. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 says, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as ye have. In other words, be content with what God's given you. Freya said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that I may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Isaiah 41:10 says, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them, and shalt not find them, even them that contend with thee. They that war against thee shall be as nothing and as a thing of naught. For I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. Just like he did with Daniel, and just like he did with John, God can be your helper. He can show up, and he can say, fear not, I will help thee. And John 1:3, 1 John 3:18. My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before Him. We will have hope. We won't have dread and terror. If we love in deed and not just in tongue. For if our heart condemn us, God is greater than our heart and knoweth all things. If you think in your heart that God is going to be angry with you, He probably will be. Because God knows everything, and there's a reason that your heart condemns you. Beloved, if our heart condemn us not, then have we confidence towards God. If we are within His boundaries, if we love Him in deed and in truth, then we have the assurance in our heart. We have the confidence. We have the hope. The reason to expect that when He shows up, He'll be pleased with us. This is not a confidence that I can stand on my own two feet before God. But it's a confidence that God, when He shows up, will say, fear not. I expect when God shows up, I'll faint just like the rest of the saints did. But I don't expect God to be angry with me. Unless I cast a shadow on his character, like Job did. Unless I trample his boundaries. You know, I've heard people say very bold and presumptuous things. An atheist one time was asked the question, what are you going to do if you find out that you were wrong, there really was a God? He said, I'll tell God he didn't give me enough evidence. You will not. When the sky rolls back, there'll be no question whether there was enough evidence. You are going to be terrified. You are going to be looking for rocks and mountains. You are going to say, like Saul, I played the fool and erred exceedingly. You're going to put all the blame in yourself right where it belongs, because you see the wrath of the Lamb, and who will be able to stand it?